The first reading this morning is from Alice Walker's book, Hard Times Require Furious Dancing, written in 2010. I used to see her walking around Lake Merritt in the morning, sometimes in Oakland, where I used to live, all by herself, just walking and probably composing some of these things in her head. She won the Pulitzer Prize for The Color Purple, a novel that is now banned in many schools, even though a well-praised movie was based upon it. Hear these words.
I will not deny my lips their smile. I will not deny my heart its sorrow. I will not deny my eyes their tears. I will not deny my hair the wildness of my age. It is profound selfishness. I will deny me nothing of myself.
The second reading is from Lawrence Robb's 2009 book, The History of Forgetting. It too is a poem, and it's called The Great Poem.
The great poem is always possible. Think of Keats and his odes, but we shouldn't have to be dying. What I'm writing now is not the great poem. After a few lines, I could tell. It may not even be a particularly good poem, although it's too early to decide about that. Keep going, I say. See what happens. But trying hard is one of the problems, since it shows in the lines as a strain or struggle that reminds the reader too much of the writer, whereas most readers want to listen alone. The great poem, I think, will arrive when I no longer care. Perhaps I'll have abandoned art altogether, and I won't even want to write the poem down. But then I'll remember what I once would have given for this moment, and I'll go back to my desk, and I'll write the poem as though I were another person, someone I will never be again.
What's that phrase? There's an elephant in the room that no one's talking about. Obviously, I have to begin my talk this morning by pointing out the elephant in the room. Something much bigger than an elephant, actually, namely the Great Labyrinth. It's an old design, this labyrinth, thousands of years old. goes back to the island of Crete, long before the golden age of Athens, hundreds of years later. We think that the Cretan civilization that produced the labyrinth was destroyed because of a volcanic eruption, and the survivors who emigrated away from the disaster were refused settlement by the Egyptians, no immigrants here, and eventually they were able to settle on the coast of Canaan, becoming after a while the people we know from the Bible as the Philistines. Despite the volcanic destruction, the image of the labyrinth survived well into the Roman and then Christian era. It's found on ancient coins, which looked pretty much exactly like what you see in the back of the room. And for centuries, this exact pattern was found on the floors in many a great cathedral in Europe, mostly made in marble or stone of some sort. I myself walked the great labyrinth in the magnificent cathedral in Chartres some 30 years ago. I tell you, it was an indelible and saving memory in my life. Now I have to be clear. The labyrinth is not a maze. The words are sometimes used interchangeably by people who do not know. But a maze is very different from a labyrinth. They are visibly different, in fact. In a maze, any maze, and there's all kinds of mazes, there are false starts, blocked off pathways, and you often have to retrace your steps in order to get out. But in a labyrinth, there's only one path to follow. You follow it toward the center, and then you follow it back out to the edge where you started off. A maze can be completely aggravating. A labyrinth is more of a meditative walk, something far more soothing than a maze, even though they both look rather complex. A maze is an image of life lived without reflection, without self-questioning, without consciousness. A maze speaks of a way of life where we make decisions because, well, they remind us of our best friend or our grandmother whom we loved, or where we reject ideas believed by abusive family members or neighbors. Our choices, the maze tells us, are not to be based upon reason, but reaction. A maze is designed to confuse us by offering promising paths that then dead end. And unpromising paths that can either lead us out or leave us in endless circles that we have no idea how to get out of. Addictions, unforgiving grudges, habits that are not clearly supportive of our health. A maze keeps us entirely reactive to the world. Am I stylish enough? Do I have the most desired game to play or tablet to use? Madison Avenue often constructs this maze, added by the knot-like bureaucracies that feel like dead ends because they're always slowing down our path. 1,000 charities in the world need us. Which one do we choose? Which 2, which 3, which 10 do we choose? How do we make that choice? The maze tries to speak to us by its baffling path and to tell us we can't make that decision. We're not equipped to do so. We don't have all the data. We will never have all the data.
So why choose any charity? Pay for a new whatever instead. 1,000 injustices call out to us, from homeless children to women in danger to the denial of long-term benefits for those who still have not found work after vainly paddling in the deep end of the recession for years and years. The maze tells us to block our ears from the voices crying out to us. After all, if you listen to everyone, says the maze, and you don't concentrate, you're never going to figure out how to get out of here. The labyrinth offers us a different theory for living life. You know right off the bat that you will go in, and then you will come out. There's nothing to panic about. Oh, there are sharp curves, sure, on the path. But like Buddha or Jesus, the labyrinth is just reminding you that such curves are simply a part of life. They're not some punishment for you being a bad person. The labyrinth does not have dead ends. You just keep on going. Even though you may want to stop now and then to shed a tear or grieve or remember or go deeper into your own grounding of love. The labyrinth does not offer you indispensable trinkets and communication devices you simply cannot live without. The labyrinth offers you just time with yourself that is not impinged upon by urgencies and calls. The labyrinth asks us to join Alice Walker in accepting the fullness of who we are, our emotions, our age, our whole lives. I will not deny my lips their smile. I will not deny my heart its sorrow. I will not deny my eyes their tears. I will not deny my hair the wildness of my age. I will deny me nothing of myself. To do so is great selfishness, she says. The labyrinth is a bit like the wise grandmother in the African story of Zomo the rabbit. Life asks us to do impossible things all the time. And the maze theory of life suggests that life is just that, only a series of clever moves. The labyrinth, however, reminds us that we need to pause and reflect on our lives and on all of our clever moves, to think things through all the way to possible consequences, to wear our seatbelts and to get checkups at the doctor's and to take time for ourselves, and not to think that taking time for ourselves is lazy or shameful. The maze tells us that that's true. But central to the living of a great and good life. Lawrence Robb, our second poet, compares a great and good life to a great and good poem. A great poem is always possible, he begins, putting us off on the right foot. It's always possible. No hesitation in saying that. A poem that is not just a list of words one after the other, randomly, but a work of tight beauty, crafted from somewhere deep inside of you. A set of words, or in the case of life, a set of days, which enlightens, moves, and teaches rather than self-destructs. Rob uses the idea of the poem to talk about our lives. What I'm doing right now, he says, is not a great poem. After a few lines, I can tell that. It may not even be a particularly good poem, although it's really too early to decide about that. Keep going, I say. See what happens. But trying hard, that's one of the problems. Yes, great lives, like great poems, don't ever start off great. There are lots of mistakes on the way. But it's important to keep going no matter what. However, says the poet, trying too hard, as the maze theory of life suggests that we do, only leads to panic and an unwarranted sense of failure. The mistakes that we make are not adventures in learning about life. They're emblems of how ridiculous we are instead. The maze is always making sure that we take time to dump on ourselves for not doing enough, for not folding in all the loose ends, for not taking on someone else's idea of what perfection is and what greatness looks like. But Rob, after saying that, is not worried. He writes clearly, "The great poem, I think, will arrive." When, you and I may ask. And he answers in a surprising way, "When I no longer care." Wow. That seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? Aren't we supposed to care a lot about love and life and truthfulness? Yes. About what Madison Avenue thinks we should be buying to make them happy? No. And again, no. I'll have abandoned artfulness altogether, and I won't even want to write the poem down, he says. Even the word art makes it sound too structured, too juried, too judged, he's afraid. But, he then realizes, I'll remember what I once would have given for exactly this moment. And then I'll go back to my desk. What is this moment he would have given everything for? What gets him back to his desk to keep going forward with either his poem or his life? The very creative moment when he decides he is free to live his own life, not to have his life lived for him by some template of perfection, drive, guilt, shame, and rage installed in his soul by someone else. That moment he's talking about. Come to think of it, I would give up everything for that moment myself. And so the poet concludes, "And so I'll write the poem as though I were another person, someone I will never be again." Well, there he clinches it. The good life, the great life, is the one where we not only remember that we don't have to care what Madison Avenue thinks, but we have to remember that we are not even going to be the same person tomorrow that we are today. New experiences will change us a bit. We are not permanent, but flowing. We're not rigid, but growing. We're not ignorant, but knowing. The maze theory of life tells us we only flow on New Year's Day when we make resolutions to change our diet, our exercise plan, our spending habits, and so forth. But as every single comedian that I know suspects, these resolutions last about 2 weeks, tops. Why? Because I think they are not based on who we are, but on clock time determined entirely arbitrarily. These resolutions do not rise out of who we actually are and are becoming. with all of our emotions and knowledge and experience. Because if that were true, we would want to look at our diet and our exercise habits today, Sunday the 29th, not this coming Wednesday. I mean, even that New Year's Day begins at midnight, that it begins at midnight is a completely arbitrary thing. New Year's Day used to be, for 3,000 years, the spring equinox here in the West. Julius Caesar, changed it to be the 1st of January to honor the god with two faces, Janus, or Janus, as we say in English. Janus giving us our name for the month January. But tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anyone in this room offers sacrifices to Janus anymore. For the Chinese, New Year's begins on the second new moon after the winter solstice. Why the second new moon and not the first? All arbitrary. The labyrinth offers us something that the maze refuses to offer us, namely, ourselves as we are and are becoming, not as others are trying to create us. The labyrinth offers us a chance to respect our own deeper selves, not to wear masks to satisfy someone else's need to control who we are for profit's sake. You see? The elephant in the room is quite amazing. It's wonderful, I mean, astonishing. And for the record, the word amazing is not at all related to the word maze. The word maze is a word that originally meant confusing or baffling. Amazing has always meant wonder. I'd rather live my life in amazement, not in a maze. I'd rather reflect on my life and come to know some heartbeats of wisdom than have my life lived for me by others for whom the heart is not quite as important. I'd rather go in deep and come out deeper. This is my New Year's prayer for myself and for each of you. So be it. Amen.